I can't see anything with my eclipse glasses.
Why not?
Because they're just completely black. I can't see you.
I can help you.
Where are you?
I'm over here, Wendy. I've brought special glasses. I've got some, and I've got some for you. Now, these are normally ski goggles, but I've been told by Jean-Claude Killy that they will allow us to stare directly at the sun, and I've been doing that all weekend.
That's not right. Don't do that, people.
I practiced as soon as the show was over on Friday, Ryan. I went outside and I started staring at it. I've been staring at it ever since.
I did a stupid
thing. Yes, there's some itching
thing.
And swelling, but that's all right. You're going to get that.
I did the dumbest thing of my career, my human career.
Think about what that encompasses.
This is really bad.
What'd you do?
On Saturday, I wanted to practice with my eclipse glasses, so I didn't fold them around my ears. I just held them up.
No!
A movie star would do with a mask, you know?
Yeah.
So I just held it over my nose, and I could see the sun on Saturday, and I'm like, wow, that's really cool. These glasses are so dark, but I can see just a little speck of the sun.
Yeah.
And then I moved the glasses away from my eyes while I was still staring at the sun, because in my head I'm like, I want to see what it looks like without the glasses. And I had this piercing headache. It's like the sun went right through the center of my skull.
Yeah.
I don't know if I burned my retinas. Somebody said you will notice it later.
Yeah.
I can see you, so that's good.
Are you seeing spots? Are there spots
everywhere?
I've
always kind of seen spots.
Do you?
Yeah, I have some floaters. I have a solar floater now.
Oh, congratulations.
So
you'll be fine. Now, can I share this with Ryan? I don't know, Ryan, if you were listening last week, but Wendy had said that she believes that when the eclipse actually takes place, that people would just start crying.
I don't think that's true.
Explain why. I don't know why.
I have heard in various news reports.
Not ours.
Steve Grzanich said this.
Okay.
People who are in total, in totality. In the path of totality, which that's my new catchphrase. I love that. Totality.
The path of totality.
That's what, you know, Southern Illinois, where the sun is going to be completely covered.
Yeah.
It's just a moving experience that people sometimes are brought to tears. They have a weird reaction.
Yeah.
I won't know because we're only going to get 87% covered, and I'll be in the car on the way home at the time.
So here, people probably will not weep. As you mentioned, but
no.
If they're in the path of totality, how can they help but to cry?
You don't think it's weird that if you were in the path of totality that it all of a sudden gets dark like it's nighttime and the temperature drops like 25 degrees?
Yeah.
I don't think that's true.
You guys are naysayers.
No, it's not. With the temperatures, you're not going to notice a difference in the change
you
won't. Temperature.
In the path of totality, you will.
No, I don't think that's true.
I remember during one of the eclipses. Now, we've had tons of eclipses, but every time we have one, they go, you're not going to get another one until the year 4216, so enjoy this one. But there's been a bunch of them.
Some of them we can't see from the United States, though. I mean, there are some all the time.
I'm already booking my hotel room for 7 years from now. I don't know about you guys. That Holiday Inn Express is going to be popping.
Yes,
you know?
It is.
Is that going to be another path of totality in 2024?
Yeah, I got to see where that path is going to be, though. Maybe I should plan a little bit better.
But during one of these as a child, all I remember was it didn't get totally dark outside, but everything was a weird, like, orangey-yellow color for a minute or two, and that was kind of cool.
But it wasn't a complete
right
coverage.
Right.
That's going to be different.
Yeah.
I heard on this very radio station from Michelle Nichols, who works at the Adler, that animals are going to go, oh, wow, it's nighttime, and chickens are going to go to roost.
But it's only going to happen for a minute or two.
2 minutes and 40 seconds, and animals don't know how long it's going to last. They're going to go, oh, man, it's dark. I better go to bed.
So even here in downtown Chicago, we'll just see a stampede of animals?
It's not going to get that dark here because there's still 13% of the sun that's showing.
Oh. And unfortunately, with the cloud cover, we might not get a great view of it anyways.
Oh, I can't stand the excitement.
Me too.
You're a jerk.
So can I tell you my glasses story?
Yeah.
So I took my kids. My wife had meetings on Saturday morning, so I took the kids. I'm like, you know what? Let's hit a bunch of places. So we hit the Ace Hardware. We hit Best Buy. We hit Home Depot. Looking for glasses? Yeah, hit Walmart, hit the teacher's store just to see if maybe there were some lingering. We knew we didn't have a chance. I finally took them to the park because they were obviously getting antsy, and a father told me that they had just got a new stock in at the Jewel in Lake Zurich. So I said, kids, pack it up. We're going to Lake Zurich. So we went to Lake Zurich, and sure enough,
are they the official ones where it says safe for direct?
We're going to find out after 119 if my eyes burn, but
everything
seems fine.
How did that guy know?
I don't know, but I thank that man.
I'm still looking
for a
Furby.
There was a line behind me because apparently the rumor had been spreading that that this jewel had him. So
everyone found out quickly.
And I'm gonna take these dollar glasses. I'm gonna sell them tomorrow for $20.
They were on eBay the other day for $20. You could get those glasses for $20. They cost a nickel to make. So
yeah.
There's a slight markup.
Yeah, but there's a markup because they're in high demand.
Yeah.
Just wait till tomorrow, man.
You can get them slightly cheaper tomorrow.
Well, you
I'm
can save them for 2024.
For 7 years. You got it.
You never can be too prepared.
On mine, the glasses part is shaped like the year 2017, though. You know how they do that at New Year's Eve?
Yeah.
Is
Seacrest
going to
ring this one in for
yes?
us? Yeah. Okay.
He missed the boat for not doing it. Hi, Alan.
Hi.
What's going on? You excited? Because I am stoked.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm going to set my alarm to get up at 1 o'clock.
What, you worked all night?
Yes, I did. I'm on my way home.
Oh, yeah. You got to get up and watch it.
Yeah. I had a question. The sun rises in the east, so why does the eclipse start on the west coast?
That is a great question. Wendy?
Because the moon is moving differently. Mm-mm. I don't know. Because that's what my husband asked me this morning. Jimmy Max, like, where is the moon now? I'm like, I don't know. And he goes, well, where is it coming from that it's going to cover up the sun? I don't know. I don't have a moon tracker.
You need
a moon tracker. My 85-year-old stepmother asked me that question yesterday, and I can't determine what the answer is.
It's a great question.
That is a great question.
Well, but remember, we're seeing it at like 121, so we're in the middle of the sky at that point, right? It's a little
right.
bit past the middle of the sky, and like Wendy said, the moon is moving as well.
And we're spinning around. Don't you feel it?
Yeah.
My axis feels awesome.
Yes.
All right, Alan, we'll try. Let's ask Grzanich this question. If the sun rises in the east, why is the eclipse coming from the west?
It starts in the west, right. Yeah,
I think the path of the moon.
Maybe.
Because the sun already rose. It's already up. It's
yeah.
already there.
Yeah.
Right. It's going to be low in the sky for the west coast.
Yes. Also true.
That's all right, because if it was high in the sky, it would melt all the plastic on their bodies.
Well, take your nap, and we'll wake you up in a little while.
Okay, thank you.
We should get his number and wake him up.
We'll wake him up. Alan,
Kevin,
we'll wake you up.
Hang on a second, okay? Get his number. We should call and wake him up.
He'll sound all groggy, like we sound now.
And crabby, you know?
A little bit. All right, let's take a break. It's Eclipse Day. We're all excited.
Come on, you're a little excited. Are you going to look at it?
Directly at it. Scientists be darned. There, I said it in my rebellious tone.
And doctors.
Yeah, and doctors.
Right.
And experts. What do experts know? We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Phil F. and it's Wendy Snyder. We have eclipse fever. The whole city, the whole country, the whole world has eclipse fever. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to join in.
I believe Alan was the last caller who was going to go to sleep and wake up.
He's already sleeping.
He wanted to know if the sun rises in the east, why is the eclipse coming from the west? And Tom, you have an answer?
Yes. If you think about it, the moon runs from east to west, but the sun goes faster. No, wait a minute. The moon, yeah. But the sun is traveling faster through the sky. That's why it starts in the west coast and goes to the east coast, because of the rotation of the earth.
I think
when you think about it, the sun is moving faster than the moon is. That's why it's going from the west to the east.
All right.
I
will accept that explanation.
I love the dead air.
The sun isn't moving.
Yeah.
Even though the sun is not moving, the rotation of the earth is the factor there. So that's why it's going from the west to the east.
All right.
Didn't clear it up at all, Tom, but I'm so glad you called.
Thank you.
Tom, do you have safety glasses? Will you be wearing safety glasses?
I got a welding helmet.
Oh.
Yeah, I think they said, 18 and up is okay? Not age.
Yep.
the level right. of
oh.
the darkness.
Oh.
Yeah, and a welding helmet is made for really bright, so that's what I got.
Do you weld?
No, I work for an auto parts store, and I'm just taking one off the shelf.
Ah.
And you'll return it, I hope, when the eclipse is over.
Oh, sure.
All right. That's fine.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank
making
you, Tom.
Sure.
Didn't clear things up.
There will be no welding work done, apparently, for
not
that
today.
Short span.
Oh, not today, Ryan.
All the welders go back to their desk. What the heck happened to my mask?
Even that scene in Flashdance where Jennifer Beals welds, they will take that out today. You can't even see that scene.
I wanted to be here so badly.
Because of the dancing or the welding?
Because she had the sweater that was off of one side, the sweatshirt.
Yeah.
She met a hot guy and had lobster.
Yep. Everything you want.
Really just
pretty
the
much.
Lobster.
Well, one thing leads to another.
Patty has a warning for you, Ryan.
For me?
Yes, Patty.
Uh-oh.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you, after making about 30 phone calls the other day, I finally called the one of the libraries, Lake Forest, and they said, oh, someone said that you can get them at Jewel. So I'm holding mine in my hand right now. I got mine at Jewel also. But the lady you just had on, maybe an hour ago or something, was saying that if they're, you know, when in doubt, throw them out. If they're made in China, don't use them. Now, the Jewel glasses say they conform to ISO, such and such. But it says made in China. So I just called the Jewel store, and they said that they are on some list that they're safe. But I've got to call in to the corporate office right now because now I'm a little bit worried. It does say conforms, so it says made in China. I just wanted to tell you that.
See, and that's what's confusing because it says meets the requirement for ISO 12312-2:2015. However.
Oh, you've got 2015. I don't have that.
I don't have that either.
Yeah.
And these were from the Adler Planetarium. But I got to tell you, Bill, we spoke about this before.
Right.
Somebody could just print this on a pair of paper glasses.
That's
and
right.
It's
I
scary.
I did. Have
it
you tried
scary.
Them? Because I looked at the sun. It's cool. It's an orange circle,
and they're really dark black, like you can't see through them. And if you look at the sun pre-eclipse, I think you can tell because it's like it was so muted when I looked through on Saturday. It wasn't this bright, crazy sun like it was when I took the glasses off.
Yeah.
I think my sight actually got better.
I think I gave myself LASIK surgery.
Well, I'm due for cataract surgery, so I don't want to
go. Oh,
save some money.
This worries me, though. This worries about this made in China, what the person said on your radio station. So now I don't know what to do with these Jewel glasses.
Are they, like, pitch black? Do you look through them now and they're completely pitch black, like you can't see anything?
Yeah.
Then Wendy says they're okay.
Something goes wrong. I stopped myself before I said that, so do not listen to Bill. Certainly do not listen to me.
Patty, I got mine at Sunglass Hut in Orland Square. Those should be okay, right?
They're
right.
Ray-Bans too.
Yeah,
Ray-Bans,
wow. They're nice.
Ray-Bans.
All right, well, good luck, Patty. If you have any information, if you get the corporate office, let us know.
Okay. All right. Okay, thanks.
Patty thought you said Rain-Mans instead of Ray-Bans. That's why she was laughing. Did you hear that?
Maybe you're supposed to wear two of them. Maybe that maybe that'll help improve.
Right.
Double glass it.
Hi, listener Bill.
Hi. Yeah, I was just wondering, you know, if the moon passes by and if the moon or if the sun becomes stronger and it melts the polar ice caps and the water levels rise, it'll be fine because the water will just fall off the edges of our planet.
That you just made it all very simple. Thank
Finally,
you.
Someone I can understand.
Yeah, now we're talking.
Thank you, Bill. Are you going to... Oh, he hung up. I want to know if people are going to watch it. You're going to look. Please tell me you're going to at least look.
I'm going to be outside because I'll be walking toward the train, but...
You're not going to come up to 22 with us and check it out from the patio?
That's not for air.
Yeah, that's not for air.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. It might have already made the air.
He wasn't warned of that, I don't think.
Why isn't it for air?
Yeah, I don't know why either. They can't get through security.
Because I don't think everyone in the building was asked.
Oh.
We're special.
I don't think we are. That's what makes me think everyone is.
But usually when they do things like this and it's not for air, it's because they're afraid Grzanich is going to show up. But he's somewhere else. He can't go there.
There's no food here.
Right.
Hi, Joy.
Hi, guys. I think it's kind of hysterical that everybody out there that's wearing the glasses that say made in China are trusting them.
Right.
There's a sound I'm starting to hear. I think it's the people in China laughing at the Americans that are believing that they're safe. And also just the thought of how many of those glasses, even if they are for real, were made by like 9-year-olds.
Oh, yeah. All of them were.
So I'm like, you know, that's America for you. It's like, oh, we're all about, you know, protecting these kids and stuff. But, yeah, we'll go buy these glasses. It might not work.
So, maybe they anyway. Put a little pinprick in it like people always used to say they did in condoms. Don't
in
trust
condoms,
anything.
Exactly. Oh. So that sound you're hearing is laughter.
Right.
From China. So.
From China.
Can you look? Thank you so much, Joy. Can you look at the eclipse through condoms?
Yeah, you can.
You'd look like you'd have googly eyes. You know those glasses that hang down?
That's the reason everybody wasn't invited up to the top of the building. What you just said right there. All right. We will take a quick break, and then there's more discussion to be had. We're 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Jerry Lewis, but he's right over here. Well, which one is he really? This is the theme song from a cartoon that aired in 1970, a Saturday morning cartoon, called Will the Real Jerry Lewis Please Sit Down? It didn't last long. It wasn't very good.
Sounds Scooby-Doo-esque.
It's very, you know what? It's the same, you know, cheap animation.
Yeah, and the sound effect I just
and
heard.
And he'll be running, and then all of a sudden he's in a dinosaur's mouth at a museum. You know how stuff like that in the cartoon world makes sense? Right. All of a sudden a race car will come up, and he'll jump in a race car, and then right. a bridge will be out, and he'll jump over it. All right. So over the weekend, we had not one, but two huge, tremendous losses to the world of comedy. The first being Dick Gregory, who was mostly a political activist in the last several decades, but started out being a very, very funny cutting-edge comic. And then the legendary Jerry Lewis died yesterday.
Kind of I'm blaming you.
I did mention both of them on Jerry Lewis got a mention on Thursday with Dean Richards. We were talking about people who are notorious for being hard to interview, and I mentioned Jerry Lewis. And then Friday,
said the worst interview ever was that we ever had was Dick Gregory, and it killed him.
It was easily one of the worst interviews you and I have ever had. He just wasn't answering any of the questions we asked him. Whatever we would ask him, he answered something else. And I attributed it to him being older, and sometimes when you're older, your mind wanders a little bit, and his did.
And he went from a pretty funny, edgy comic to an activist, and the activist took over.
Yeah.
There was not much funny left.
Yeah, that's true.
We talked to him like a year or so before, and he was fantastic.
He was really good. Yeah, and from that previous interview, I couldn't wait to talk to him again, and then he came on, and it was a disaster, and we talked about that a little bit on Friday's show.
I went to get coffee during the interview.
You weren't there during the interview? He wasn't either. Nobody was there. Nobody was there. But people who have been important to the world of comedy over the last several decades always, always, always mention Dick Gregory as one of their inspirations. Bill Cosby, who's had some weird side stories in the last couple of years, when we had him on a couple of years ago, I remember asking him, if there was a Mount Rushmore of stand-up comedy, it would be you, it would be George Carlin, it would be Lenny Bruce, and who would the fourth head be? And he didn't even flinch. He said, well, that'd be Dick Gregory. You know, everybody always used him as like the barometer of what cutting edge is in stand-up.
Did he inspire Richard Pryor?
Oh, without a doubt. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. So losing him was tough. I got to be honest, he got far less press than I expected.
Yeah.
He really didn't get much press.
It was kind of a blip.
Yeah. You really had to dig deep to find stories about him. But then Jerry Lewis got a lot of attention yesterday, and rightfully so. Now, I would say, I was trying to think of who are, in the world of comedy, who are the people that people tend to either just love like crazy or despise like crazy, and Jerry Lewis was at the top of that list.
No middle ground, really.
No.
You loved him or you hated him.
No.
I was not a fan. I'm sorry, he died.
Yeah.
But I just never found him to be really funny.
You know, it's a strange kind of funny. It's as slapsticky as you could possibly be. The people who were true fans of his, he could do no wrong. And, I mean, a lot of those movies are just, they're almost unwatchable. They really are. I'm trying to remember the movie he made later on in his career that Roger Ebert said, I'm trying to remember a worse commercial-made film than this movie. I want to say, the title's escaping me. It was one of his last few movies. But Roger Ebert just, when it came out, I remember reading his review. And sometimes Roger kind of loved having a bad movie. He wrote a whole book about bad, like horrible movies. That's a great book. But this one in particular, he was just, you know, he talked at great length about how awful it was.
I loved him in King of Comedy.
He was great in King of Comedy.
I mean,
he really was
super great.
Yeah.
That was a fantastic movie.
He really was. Now, on a personal note, I mentioned this with Dean the other day. As notorious as he was for being a hard person to interview, because he was, I mean, in almost any interview you ever saw with him, with the exception of when he'd show up on The Tonight Show or Letterman, you know, because he knew that was a wide audience. But when he would do any of the smaller shows or somebody local would try to interview him, it hardly ever went well. And I got to interview him when I was at WLS, and I wasn't nervous, but I was sure at some point I would say something and he would break bad on me. And what happened was the complete opposite. It started out fun. He wasn't in the studio. He was on the phone. He was appearing at Ron Onesti's theater, the Arcata Theater. So he called a couple days in advance, you know, and it was a Wednesday. He wasn't in Chicago yet. And the interview started out well. And then he just, as time went on, he became more appreciative and nicer. I mean, he started out good. He got better and better. And it was one of the most amazing half hours I've ever had interviewing anybody. He was a blast. He laughed a lot.
Were you waiting for the shoe to drop?
Yeah.
Through the whole interview, pretty
much? Every single question I went, is this the question that he's going to be offended by? At some point I said to him, I go, there are certain words that I hear, and whenever I hear them, I think of you. And he goes, like what? And I go, well, just like... if I'm reading a cereal box and it contains riboflavin, and he goes, riboflavin, and then I said riboflavin, and we both said riboflavin, and I go, there are just words in the American lexicon that I consider Jerry Lewis words. So he mentioned some, and I mentioned
some.
That's
really funny.
It was just, it was so much fun to talk to him, you know? Now, the interview that has become infamous is one that ran a couple years ago. I don't know exactly what went wrong, but it's the most uncomfortable interview I've ever heard in my life.
Now, are we going to play a little of it?
Yeah.
Because do you want the story before or after it?
Well, let's just give a setup. There was some, I don't remember if it was a newspaper or a magazine.
But it was the Hollywood Reporter decided to do a special package. It was the end of the year issue on 10 stars who were still working in their 90s.
Yeah.
It was called Creative Until You Die. The idea was not only to celebrate their longevity, but to try to get a sense of what made them creative and vital long past a time when most of their contemporaries had retired. So the group included Don Rickles,
yeah.
Norman Lear, Betty White, Jerry Lewis. Each person would be photographed and videotaped for a really short 10 to 15 minute interview. And the idea was to get them talking about aging and creativity and then to reflect on their career a little bit. Now, the guy who did this is a reporter, Andy Lewis, no relation. And Andy Lewis offered to fly to Vegas to interview Jerry Lewis. Andy says, I knew he had a reputation for being a tough interview, but a chance to talk to a comedy legend who had been the biggest box office draw of the 1960s and knew Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, and other legends was an opportunity not to be missed. So they were going to did the photo shoot first, then the interview, and this Andy Lewis said it was a bad idea. He didn't like the amount of equipment or the number of people that were in the house.
Yeah.
He offered a nonstop barrage of criticism, ignoring all of the photographer's attempts to loosen him up with small talk. At first, Andy Lewis says, I thought he was just acting. Being a grouchy thing was a gimmick.
He wasn't.
No. He seemed to be getting angrier and angrier as time went on. I learned later that he was tired from touring and trying to squeeze the interview into one of a few days off in his schedule might have been asking too much of a 90-year-old guy.
Yeah.
I started to get nervous. Usually you try to engage in some small talk before the interview, says Andy Lewis. Maybe build a rapport to relax both yourself and the subject. But there was never a chance with Jerry Lewis. When we sat down for the interview, he glowered at me. I had a terrible feeling in the pit of my stomach. I had batted around opening questions with the editor of the package, and we decided to start with, have you ever thought about retirement?
Yeah.
Good-natured challenge. Others had taken it that way. Cloris Leachman responded, F that.
Perfect answer.
But Lewis had just a simple answer.
He didn't handle it well. Let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll play you some of this interview. If you haven't heard it before, It's
uncomfortable.
It's so uncomfortable. And it didn't need to be, but it is. We'll play you that and then more reflections on the life and the career of Jerry Lewis. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Laffin and it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about Jerry Lewis. This is an interview from last year. He's being interviewed by The Hollywood Reporter. They're talking to celebrities over the age of 90, just trying to figure out what gives them their drive and ambition at that age. The interview does not go well. Here it is.
We're doing a feature on people who are still working in their 90s. Have you ever thought about retiring?
Why?
Was there never a moment that you thought it might be time to retire, or you would want?
Why?
You come from a generation a little older, and I think of Bob Hope, George Burns, Sinatra, people you knew, many of whom didn't want to or never retired either. Do you see similarities with them?
None.
None? What do you think drives people like you and them to want to keep working?
Because we do it well.
And how about what's different about performing now for you than, say, 20 years ago? How is it different for you?
It isn't.
Kevin, you can stop it there. It doesn't get any better or worse. It gets harder for the interviewer because he realizes, like you heard the first few questions, he's kind of laughing a little bit because he thinks Jerry's putting him on. But then two or three questions in, he realizes this is going to be a long afternoon.
And this is not like a newbie. This guy's been interviewing people, and he sounded so nervous. Yeah. And, you know, you don't want to have an interview go poorly because it reflects badly on you and the person you're interviewing.
True.
Jerry made it go badly.
Right.
And in retrospect, this Andy Lewis from The Hollywood Reporter said, I wish I would have just turned the cameras off and asked Jerry Lewis if there was anything I could do to make him happier.
Yeah.
I would have told him about the other interviews and about how we were trying to figure out the secret to remaining vital for as long as possible. I would have told him how genuinely interested I was in what Vegas was like 50 years ago. I don't know if that would have made a difference, but
I don't think it would have.
He was just in that mood that day.
Yeah.
Then why do the interview?
I'm not sure.
Burns me up a little bit.
I'm not sure. So I understand how divisive a character Jerry Lewis was. And not just last night, because I went back and I watched some of his things last night. And I always wonder with guys like him who were he was red hot. I mean, in the 50s and in the 60s, both with Dean Martin and then solo, you know, that relationship with he and Dean was so incredible because it was the ultimate love-hate relationship. They both respected each other. They both realized that without the other guy, we wouldn't be here. But they didn't get along. I mean,
they really truly didn't.
No. Later on, they both admitted. Jerry admitted and Dean admitted that the other was the key to the success of the group. But they were like the Eric and Kathy of the 50s, Wendy. They loved each other and hated each other at the same time.
Yeah, but they stayed together for the most part.
They did. But, I it was such an interesting dynamic because you had Dean Martin, who was just so smooth and sophisticated and suave. And so, yeah, and then Jerry was just a goof. You know, and it was such an odd pairing, and it worked, you know. And then when Jerry went solo, a lot of those movies are almost impossible to watch because they're just, it's all one joke.
Even coming from you, you're saying
yeah.
that.
I mean, there are some that were enjoyable, but I don't know. I loved them when I was 4 or 5, and I've tried to go back and watch them again and enjoy them, and it's really hard to.
One of his last movies was Max Rose. Is that what you're referring to?
No, Max Rose is an interesting story. That was a movie that they played in Europe, and I don't think it got released here until maybe a year ago, 3 or 4 years after it was made. He's a musician whose
pianist.
Wife dies, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was
very upset, and rightfully so, that... Like much of his work in France, you know, it's like a joke. Oh, Jerry, they love him in France. They truly do. They love him in France. But here in the United States, he always felt anyway. And I talked about that with him during the interview, that he didn't always get his due here in the United States, that it took a European audience to understand him fully.
And then who was it, Frank Sinatra, who brought them together at one of the last telethons?
Yeah, in 1975, I think, or 76. And I was watching it live that night. you know, they didn't talk for years and years and years. Jerry and Dean just didn't say a word to each other, held this hard bitterness. And then Frank Sinatra came out on the telethon and performed and said after a few songs, hey, I brought a friend with me. I think you'd enjoy meeting. And then Dean Martin comes out and they were both crying and hugging each other. And it was just, honestly, it was one of the most magical moments I ever saw on TV because no one ever thought it was like the Beatles reuniting. Everyone's like, that's never going to happen.
And did they kind of keep in touch after that a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad they were able to bury the hatchet.
Yeah. I know that when Dean Martin's son, Dino, died, Jerry went out of his way to say, you know, if you need a friend, I'm here for you. If there's anything I can do. And that just crushed Dean Martin. His son dying in a plane crash just crushed him. So
Joy remembers all the telethons, too. I just remember seeing it and whining about having to go back to school.
School's the next day.
Yeah. Hi, Joy.
Hey, guys. Something I haven't heard much about since his death yesterday was about the telethons. I was born in 60, and I remember watching a lot of his movies, his and Dean Martin, and then on his own, and loving him even as a kid.
Yeah.
But I remember the telethons. The whole family would watch them. We'd watch throughout the weekend and be donating and as we got older. And just that legacy that he has of really having cared for so many and encouraging other people to be more noble and, you know, give from the heart.
Joy, it's amazing. Over the years, they collected more than $2 billion because of Jerry and those telethons. And then the telethon just kind of, the people behind MDA just kind of unceremoniously let him go. They decided Jerry's run his course. And that's sad because without him, I don't know how they raise anywhere near that kind of money.
And you think of what $2 billion was then. Now with the deficit and all, I mean, $2 billion, we throw those numbers around. But think of what $2 billion was back then and how much good that did.
He did a lot of good. For muscular dystrophy. Were you thinking of the movie Hardly Working. He came back?
Yeah. That's the one Roger Ebert just panned like crazy.
In Jerry Lewis's first film in a decade, he plays Bo Hooper, an unemployed circus clown who can't seem to hold down a job.
He went that motif a couple of times. You know, the most famous one is he made this movie called The Day the Clown Cried about a clown in the concentration camps. And it was so bad. The studio did everything they can to bury this movie. No one really has seen it in public.
It's on YouTube, the whole movie.
You can see it now, but for years and years and years, Harry Shearer used to tell this story about how Jerry invited him to the house. He begged him to invite him to the house to see this movie. And he said, your mouth was just wide open. You couldn't believe how horrible it was. You know? Yeah.
Thank you, Joy. We appreciate you calling.
All right. So bad weekend for comedy. Dick Gregory and then Jerry Lewis. Very, very sad news.
And Jeff Hoover from the WGN Morning TV News is really upset over this.
I tried to get him on with us today, and he said he's too upset to come on and talk about it.
I liked Hoover's version of Jerry Lewis.
Right. A much lighter, more fun version.
Yes.
I know. It's true. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then there's a lot more show coming your way next. So stay here. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Wendy, David Hochberg is here. I beg of you, don't stare directly at David Hochberg.
I'm putting my eclipse glasses on.
You will burn your retinas.
Yes.
Who took them? Oh, I thought somebody stole my
glasses.
No, they're
right up there on the console.
All right, go ahead, Hochberg.
Is there like a nuclear clock countdown going on? Are we having a CNN moment?
It's coming soon. Wendy's very, very excited.
119.
Yeah, I could care less. I can't wait.
3 hours and 10 minutes.
I can't wait till this day's over so I could stop hearing about it. Guess what? Don't look at the sun. Really? Okay.
Yeah. On other days, you're also not supposed to look at the sun.
Yeah, really. It's a special day.
Right.
Guys, the moon is covering the sun. Right. It's not like every other
day. I'll watch the video. I'll be okay. I'm like Nick Saban. I'll catch it on the news.
Right.
Just do the time elapsed. Speed it up a little bit. I'm busy. I got loans to
do. You're trying to help people.
I'm trying to help people.
Can we talk HELOC?
Yeah, we can talk HELOC.
Home equity line of credit.
Yeah, I talked to a divorced lady yesterday on the way back from my in-law's house, and she's going through a divorce. And I used to congratulate people on getting divorced because I've been divorced and it was a great event for me.
Some people not so great.
And then a lady yelled at me once, so I stopped doing that. And then yes. I'm like, so now I ask, is this a congratulatory or is this a painful? And she said, oh no, this is great. I'm like, well, congratulations.
Oh.
This is great. So she owed $56,000 on her home. Home worth is about $110,000. And She's going to get it from her father-in-law, had a private mortgage on the home. She had about $6,000 worth of credit card debt. She's like, one of my friends told me to give you a call, but also said to look at a home equity line of credit. I'm like, that's a great idea for small loan amounts, because she only owed like $50-some thousand. So I said, here's what you do. I said, we're going to take out a line of credit with First Midwest Bank, because our HELOCs aren't as good as theirs. And up to 80% of the value of your house. She had 720 credit scores, made about $35,000 a year. It's a nice split with her husband. They had a 25-year-old daughter who's moved out. You know, he's going his way, she's going her way, and she's going to get the house. I said, fantastic. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take out an $88,000 line of credit. You're going to pay off your father-in-law, 56, 58. You're going to take out another six to pay off your credit card debt. So you're going to run with about a $64,000, $62,000 mortgage. She's like, why do I want to take out an $88,000 mortgage? And I said, because you can. Just like I told you, Wendy, you know, you always want to take out extra when you can.
And you have a cushion then.
And you've got a little cushion for emergency.
Because I'll tell you something, I might not be the only one who doesn't save their money. A lot of people don't save their money.
Well, here, you know, you could have a cataclysmic event like a heating or air conditioner goes out and there's $4,000 or $5,000.
Yep.
Okay, and a new roof could be $5,000 to $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, depending upon
25.
The size of your house, right?
We have a small house but a large roof.
Right, yeah.
So that... Sometimes you get screwed up that way, too.
That's a shock.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You got a lot of eaves.
Yeah, a lot of eaves.
Yeah, that one-bedroom house of yours that all four of you live in.
Huge roof.
Huge
though.
Roof, yeah.
It used to be an International House of Pancakes.
I know. Big orange roof.
Yep.
It's got the six different syrups on the table.
It still smells like boysenberry sauce.
Is your house still sticky?
Yeah, very sticky. We don't know why.
That's good. Okay.
But this came in very handy for her.
No, this came in very handy. We're going to save her cash flow. Paying off her credit card debt saved her $250 a month.
Is she nervous, though, that she only owed $56 on the house and now she's got a bigger mortgage?
I asked her that. I said this is a little higher. I said, this is a little higher elevated, you know, risk level. But if you completely change your spending habits and your saving habits, she's basically going to shut down her checking account and use her checking and use her HELOC as her checking account. And she's got, because she has $1,000 in her savings account, $2,000 in her checking account. I said, well, why would you do that when you could pay it into your HELOC? You know, your bank's only paying you less than 0.5% in your savings account,
mm-hmm.
and just put it in a HELOC. So I like that strategy for small loan amounts, like under $50,000, $60,000. I like that strategy if you're disciplined, because First Midwest Bank will do the line of credit at no closing costs. You have to keep it open for 3 years, which she will. And she will literally pay off her home in about 7-8 years if she just continues to pay off her debt and have her check from her payroll check go into her her line of credit and just be diligent. She'll save herself thousands of dollars in interest over the life of the loan.
I have
access to the money going
about
forward.
Early on in the story, you said that we're going to go through another bank because they have a lower interest rate.
Right.
If your bank knows that, why wouldn't they just meet it or beat that price?
Because banks are stupid.
Yeah.
Okay. Because banks think you're stupid. Oh. And banks are big banks make billions of dollars a quarter, thinking that they've got you and that you're not going to shop. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, and I
shopped because the bank I was with
was trying to drill you.
Yeah. They were not helping.
Yeah.
At
and
all.
You've been a client at that bank for how long? 20 plus years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, you get comfortable, and that's why everybody thinks, well, I'm going to go to my bank to refinance. Well, that's the worst thing you could do, because the bank thinks that they've got you, and they've got you in a comfort level, and typically in the rate that we could get you is a lot lower than the rate than your current bank does, and the closing costs are a lot lower, too. I mean, just shop around and check it out. Our closing costs are one of the lowest in the industry. So, you know, buyer beware, education is key, and in this situation with this divorced lady, this was a perfect example. I said to her, I said, listen, if you lived in a $400,000 house and you had a $150,000 mortgage and you had to give your ex 50% of the equity, it's a completely different story. But since you had a relatively small loan amount, $62,000, and you're going to pay it down at $500 a month, it's a relatively less risk loan, and you're going to be knocking the principal down at an accelerated rate. It's a perfect opportunity for her to save a ton of money and get in and flip the loan around. So, and she was very happy.
Here's my reason why I called you the first time. I heard you on a radio show, and it was amazing how you were just whipping through numbers, and it's like, it sounds too good to be true. You need to educate yourself, as you mentioned. I didn't know who to call to educate myself.
Yeah.
So you people can call you, and if you can't help them, you explain what to do so you can help them later. In turn, everybody wins.
Right. And I told her, I said, listen, I'm not going to make any money on this transaction, but you owe me three referrals, right? And that, you know, she's like, and I said, no, you owe me three referrals and I'll hold you to it. So, you know, it's, you know, you pay it forward. You know what I mean? You can't help everybody. This was the best path for this lady who just went through a divorce. You know, listen, I went through a divorce. It wasn't the most enjoyable situation. I didn't have any kids. Her kids are older. I was a similar situation as her. You know, we just wanted to get the hell away from each other and split everything up and move on, you know, which was her situation. And, you know, if you can make it easy for people just to convert their family life and their living situation and cut the anchor and move on with your new life, you know, that's what it's all about. You know, the ex-father-in-law is going to get his money, and the credit cards are going to get their money, and she's done with everybody. The family, everybody gets along. They're still in a great relationship. You know, I heard Tom Dreesen on here talking about Frank Sinatra, how he said, I think it was on your show, you know, make sure you're friends with all your ex-wives. Yep. And, you know, I told her that story, and she laughed, and I said, you know, listen, just turn the page and move on, and this will help you pay your home off faster, gain access to liquidity. God forbid you have a financial anomaly in the future. You've got, you know, you have access to liquidity, which is always good. And, you know, it was the right thing for her and her family for that situation.
Is it sometimes tougher for a woman who's coming out of a divorce because the credit can sometimes be in either the husband's name or a joint name?
It's not just the woman. It could be tough for the man, too.
Yeah,
because I can't tell you how many times that on the way out, you know, one spouse or the other throws a torpedo in the bow just to be a vindictive ex-spouse because they can. Right. Oh, yeah. You know what? I'll take care of the Visa card. I'll take care of the Amex card.
Right.
Oh, I forgot to pay for 120 days. I've been in situations where we've tried to get somebody a new home and then their credit score drops 60 points because the credit card that they're on as a user was paid late by the ex-spouse.
Oh.
You know, guy and girl. I've had it happen to the men were vindictive against the women, and the women were vindictive against the guy. It goes both ways. So just be careful.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. We're chatting with David Hochberg, Vice President of Lending at Pearl Mortgage.
And marriage counselor. He does some marriage counseling.
Yeah, I do a lot of marriage counseling. And child behavior.
Child behavioral advice.
Yeah.
You can reach him at WGNDavid.com or the phone number to call if people want to reach you?
312-751-1333. Also, ComEd is offering, we got to hit a break, but we'll talk to you after the break about what ComEd's offering to consumers, both business and personal, to save money on their energy.
All right. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. All right. We are chatting with David Hochberg, Vice President of Lending at Pearl Mortgage. I got an email from ComEd and or a letter that said, hey, can we come out and give you a home energy efficiency test? And our electric bill is through the roof.
They're free. The best four-letter word in the English language. It starts with an F. And it's not only for your home. It's for your business, too. I'm going to be doing a live appearance at Mariano's this Saturday in New City, 1500 North Clybourne, with ComEd. They saved Mariano's $1 million on the build-out of their stores because of all the energy efficiency recommendations they made.
Yeah.
So if you're a business owner right now, $1 million, it's a lot of money. You could go to ComEd, and if you're in the ComEd service area, obviously, and they will come out to your business or your home and do a free energy audit of your home or business and make recommendations to you and your business and how to save money. It's free. They want ComEd. It's crazy. I didn't know about this. They want you to use less of their energy. Okay. They want you. It's the only business that I know that wants them, that wants consumers to use less of what they offering. So I'm going to be at the Mariano's with, it's going to be a whole thing with ComEd there. The managers and the spokespeople from Mariano's are going to be talking about all the different things that ComEd, all the different recommendations that ComEd made for their grocery store. Think about grocery store. You have freezers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You've got, you have
all the lighting.
You've got all the checkouts. You got everything, right?
Yeah.
You know, all the doors opening up on electric. Save them $1 million by implementing recommendations in their store. So if you're a business owner right now, you could go to ComEd.com or WGNDavid.com, click on radio. I'll be at the New Century Mariano's in New City, 1500 North Clybourne. You could hear me yell at people on Saturday morning at 10 to noon.
Do you know what they do at Mariano's? And they do this at Target, too, and this is a way of saving energy, is a lot of their glass enclosed cases, like stuff that milk would be in or cheese or dairy products, The lights don't go on unless you're right in front of the case.
Smart.
Motion sensor. I love it. It freaked me out the first time.
It's one of the things they recommended. Why have the light on at all times? You know where the milk is, mm-hmm. right? You're going to go buy your milk. You know, why do you need the light on in the milk section, for lack of a better term, when you're not there?
Yeah.
So these little things, think about it.
It adds up.
It adds up a lot, especially if you're in an industrial facility. So PermaSeal did it, saved them over $30,000-$40,000. So Roy and Loris had ComEd come out to their facility, saved them like $3,000 a month off their electric bill. Okay.
And every time you get this thing in the mail, like how much energy you're using in comparison to your neighbors, ours is like 10,000 more.
Yeah, because all your neighbors are plugged into your outlets, which you didn't realize all the.
But
all
I can just have ComEd figure that out.
Yeah. ComEd will come out and say,
unplug all the neighbors.
Yeah, that's an extension cord from your neighbor. That's why your electric bill is so high. Just a thought.
All right. Can we take a quick question
here?
Yeah,
go.
For someone who is looking to refinance, this is Ron. Hey, Ron, how are you?
Hey, Wendy. Hey, Bill. Hey, David. Hey, Wendy. I'm Ron Silver, Jack's brother.
Jack Silver, my old program director at The Loop.
He only speaks highly of you, so.
He's a great liar.
and he says you're gorgeous, which I have to agree with him.
Oh, okay, Ron. Back to you.
Back to David. Right. Hey, David.
Refinance a room.
Here we go. He remembers talking to me already, Wendy. This is how it goes to Jewish boys, I'm telling you. Recently
sold a condo. See, making everybody's crazy.
That's right. We recently sold a condo, so I have about $100,000 off of my account, plus I paid a car off for about $12,000. Now I only show that I have one mortgage. Is there a possibility that my debt-to-income ratio now will change and I will be able to refinance?
Well, it depends what you do. Obviously, getting rid of a mortgage is a positive, right? You lose that payment. You know, do you have income coming in? You know, now that you've clearly established who you are, what's your yearly income? You know, I'll try to make it as generic as possible. If you have the income. And you have the if you have the income and the credit in order to pull it off, obviously you lost a major debt by getting rid of another home, then yes, you'd be able to. And your value of your home is in a level where we could get it done, or you might have to bring some of that extra dough in that you just made from selling the other condo. Yes, we could refinance you, but we need a lot more information.
I will call you at your office.
All right, 312-751-1333. Thanks, Ron.
Say hi to Jack for me. And someone wants to know a question for David. With an FHA loan, after 5 years, will my PMI or private mortgage insurance automatically fall off?
Depends on when you took out the FHA loan, because FHA changed the rules of dropping PMI to about 3 or 4 years ago. If you don't put down 10% on an FHA loan under the new rules, on a 30-year fixed loan, you have PMI through the entire length of the loan. If you put, yes, you're
giving. What about when you hit that level?
It doesn't matter. It does. FHA just completely screwed over all the consumers. It's a bad rule. It's disgusting. And I said it was disgusting when it came out. And it needs to be changed, number one. Number two,
it's starting to boil now.
There's no reason for it. It's a complete screw job for consumers.
Yeah.
Right? It's absolutely ridiculous.
I know.
Here it goes.
30 years. You got to pay PMI for 30 years because you didn't put 10% down.
Don't do
it. It's a travesty. So if you put down at least 10% under the new rules, and you have to have PMI for at least 16 years under a 30-year fixed. It doesn't make any sense at all. But don't get upset at me. 15-year fixed, you've got to have it for a long period of time as well. It's ridiculous. But under the old rules,
David, be honest.
What?
It's PMS.
I have PM something. I have Advil. I have
that's
I,
fine.
I have a leave PM going because I got a bad back. But that's all right. What I'm saying, and that's why maybe I'm so freaking tired because I took the wrong leave.
All right. Anyway,
but if you what the hell are we talking about? PMI.
Yeah.
If you've got if you're under the old FHA rules, they do fall off a lot faster. But
new ones are screwy and bad.
Right. And it depends, Texter, when you took out the FHA loan. If you give me a call, 312-751-1333, we'll be able to figure that out for you. And also, 1 in 20, I sent you this that story according to Bankrate.com, 1 in 20 homeowners are behind in a mortgage payment. It just proves to show you that if you know that you don't have any money in the bank, the time to call a mortgage professional is before you make the late mortgage payment, because you got a much better shot of getting help.
Yeah.
It's not to say that we can't get something done with one late mortgage payment, but when you start doing multiple late mortgage payments in a row, what they call like a rolling 30, right? You get to 30 days and you miss it, and then you send it in, and then it's continually 30. That's a completely bad situation. And if you know somebody, if it's not you, if it's your friend, family, coworker, or neighbor that is having trouble, the best time to call a mortgage professional is before you make the late mortgage payment. 1 in 20 homeowners in the United States, according to Bankrate.com, are behind on their mortgage payment, which is just devastating to your credit score.
Yeah.
It is an absolute kick in the crotch with a steel-toed boot to your credit scores, a late mortgage payment.
312-751-1333. You can also email them at WGNDavid.com. Don't get so worked up when you're at Mariano's this Saturday from 10 a.m. till noon.
Yeah, new city. It's 1500 North Clybourne. Come on out. They're going to be selling Bloody Marys. And hot $5 Bloody Marys, $1 hot dogs, and something else. So I'm starting a GoFundMe page in order to help me, you know, cover the cost of my hot dogs
sure.
and Bloody Marys.
Of course,
I'm a lot. You think I'm crazy now?
No.
I'm a lot funner with a couple of Bloody Marys and about six hot dogs.
A lot funner.
Yeah, a lot more fun. Funner, funniest, whatever the hell. It is.
Whatever.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, right, David.
Thanks
Don't look
me.
At the sun.
Yeah. Goodbye.
We'll take a quick break and then more show. Eric Zorn joins us from the Tribune in just a bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Zorn, the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
Eric Zorn is here, fine columnist for your Chicago Tribune. Let's talk haircuts. I know you just wrote about this, but this is something that needs to be discussed. Take it away.
Yeah, well, I was down in West Virginia. My son is spending the summer there. He goes to college down there, and my wife gave me instructions when I left. Said, give him a hug goodbye and make sure he gets his hair cut. And he's kind of this wild mop of hair. It's not that it's long. It's just kind of out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And so she deputized me to do this, and I was cajoling him all week. Like, hey, we got to get over to the barbershop. He's like, yeah, and trying to shove me away. And I finally said, look, if I don't get you to the barbershop, mom is going to kill me, and then mom is going to go to prison, and you're going to be an orphan.
Yep.
And so that you don't want that, so let's go. And so he said, all right. And he you know, very grudgingly, we went off to the Supercuts.
Uh-huh.
And
oh,
they,
money,
they
no
did,
object.
You know, they did a haircut that I think was, you know, remember how when Elmer Fudd would go to the barbershop and
yes.
Bugs Bunny would like snip
yes.
the scissors
yes.
over his head?
Yes.
And I think that's kind of what they did, but they tidied him up a little bit.
All right, a quick question.
Yes.
Your son is how old?
He's 20.
20. So at what point is it either your call or your wife's call, or at what point is it up to him to
Well,
decide?
This is this is the point. See, this is the point. This is what happened was he went along with this. He's a very sweet kid, and afterwards I said, you look good. You know, kind of punched him in the arm. And
yeah.
He's like, yeah, well, I kind of wish that, you know, you and mom weren't in charge of my haircuts.
Oh.
And in the moment he said that, I went, oh, he's absolutely right.
Yeah. Why didn't he say something before, though?
Because he's not.
Boy, he's a good kid.
He's not confrontational like that. But he was letting me know by sulking and avoiding the subject that he didn't want to do it. But afterwards, I realized, like, this is something that it's, as a parent, it's very hard to shut up, right? And to let your kid. I mean, he's 20. He knows what he looks like. He knows the effect the effect he wants to have on other people. It's not like he looks in the mirror. He's a 20-year-old, looks in the mirror probably 2 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, what? I have long hair? Who knew?
Yeah.
Was it really long?
No, it was just kind of out of control. It was, he's got this nice blonde hair, but it kind of grows out a little bit, and it's just kind of get out of control. It looks
Why
better
did your wife
split.
Put the job on you? Why couldn't you?
Because I was down there. I was down there, and it requires some, it's not just, you can't call him and say get a haircut. You've got to actually,
physically be
march
in the room.
Him off to the barbershops. And I as soon as he said that, I realized that I was really wrong to have done that, and I apologized to him. I said, you know what, I hadn't thought of it that way. You're totally right. I will never ask you to get a haircut again.
Yeah, now that it's short, you say that.
It's not actually all that short. I pointed out it was kind of a Bugs Bunny haircut, where he was like, I think he got back with a stylist. He was like, just take a little bit off and
right.
get my dad off my case.
I have two boys with pretty long hair. Michael's is pretty really long, and when it starts looking crazy, I say, maybe it's time for a trim. That's all I say.
And what does he say?
He agrees, because usually it doesn't lay right or something.
Yeah, it's not length. It really wasn't length that bothers me. I don't mind long hair on boys.
It's width.
I'm not like a 19. It kind of is.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you're right. It's kind of width, and it's when it just looks unkempt, right? I mean, long hair is fine. I'm not like a 1950s dad. Like, son, you look like a girl. I mean, nothing like that. I just feel like it's at some point I feel like it's not looking.
It's his head, though.
It's his head. No, you're totally right. I'm wrong. I've confessed.
But
error
doesn't
on this.
Doesn't this fit the equation a little bit? The fact that you guys are probably funding some of school, don't you go? Even though he's 20, we still
hold
have
that over him. That's not
a 1950s answer.
I would not do that, son. I'm not going to pay for your college.
No, I'm not saying you pull it back, but don't you feel like a little bit like we still get some say in his appearance because we're kind of.
Wendy's shaking her head, and I kind of agree. It's like
appearance.
What?
No, the way you handle things. Yes, you have every right to say that.
You know,
when you come home, we're paying for your education. You should listen to our rules. But your appearance, don't wear those jeans, or I'm not paying for your stuff.
No, I'm not gonna. It's tempting, isn't it? Because when they're little, you make every decision like that for them. And as they get a little older, you start giving them a little more latitude. And then at some point, you really got to realize, and I think it's well before 20, you've got to realize, like, you know, what his hair looks like, what clothes he chooses.
Yeah.
As long as it's within the law, you just got to step back, right? I mean, do you ever tell your daughters, like, you're not wearing that?
It's no, fashion-wise, no. But one of my daughters, Kylie, likes to be something of a world traveler. And about once or twice a month, she'll find about something about a country. Like last night, we all went out to dinner, and she said, I'm thinking during the break I might go to Ghana. And we all went, why? And she explained the situation going on in Ghana and that she wants to see it. And it sounds romantic, but then I realize if she goes to Ghana, that means we're paying for her trip to Ghana.
But that's totally different.
That's very different. But I
agree with you on that.
About Ghana.
Yeah. But
if you want to go to Ghana, you can pay your own trip to Ghana.
What if she wanted to get a pixie haircut? I know you love her long hair. I mean, what if you all of a sudden said, you've got to get a pixie haircut? You'd never do that to her.
Fashion-wise or appearance-wise, yeah. I've suggested to my wife, much like your wife suggested to you, maybe you might want to talk to him, but I on a couple of occasions I've said, maybe mention that this shirt isn't the best thing for her, or that those pants aren't the best thing for her.
Too revealing. That's okay.
Yeah. And that's something I think that, and I've got a daughter also, but I totally abdicate everything when it comes to her and fashion appearance. That's all my wife's purview. Well,
how does your wife feel about this? Because now that you're feeling kind of this buyer's guilt or haircut guilt,
yes,
haircut remorse, does she feel like she shouldn't have jumped into?
Well, it's interesting. I came back and I said, I mean, I didn't tell her this over the phone. We sat down. I said, you know what? I really regret telling Ben to get his haircut. I think that was a mistake. And she pushed back at first. She said, look, you know, it's like I'm still his mom, and I don't think he knows the effect that his appearance has on people. There is something to that, but that's how you learn. And I was thinking back when I was that age and I had like the shaggy haircut and I was wearing bell-bottom trousers and everything, with plaid and cuffs and everything. If my parents had told me, we don't like your fashion choices, which they never would have done. And I realized that's part of the respect you've got to give, and you've got to realize that kids have got to make their own mistakes or their own choices.
But wouldn't it spurn you if somebody said something like that to you? Wouldn't you become adamant that, well, then I'm going to do more of this?
Yes. You get rebellious.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as his hair's clean, I mean, who cares?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I think but that requires some stepping back, because when they're, you know, 12, 13, I think you take more control over it, because they maybe don't realize the effect they have, or they don't realize what it looks like, and they don't. But at some point, I think it's well before 20, you just say, you know what, you're going to look the way you look, and as long as it's legal, the issue of what a daughter would wear if something is too revealing, or, you know, I don't know. I mean, does Terry make that decision for you guys? Or
even though I'm a firm believer in equality in every way, shape, and form, it's been easier for me anyway. If I had sons, there'd be certain things that I would think I would want to talk to them about over my wife doing. But because they're daughters, I think it's better.
Mom should handle it.
Yeah.
Well, something like that.
Yeah.
Although, again, do they listen to Terry or do they just wear what they want?
No, they're pretty good about that. For the most part, you know, they'll plead their case if it's something that's, you know, debatable, You know, it's mostly Kylie. Reese just, you know, green doesn't look good on you, and then everything that she owns is green is
she'll
gone.
Throw it out.
Yeah. No more
but
green
some
clothes.
Of the stuff, I mean, I see some of the girls walking to school now, and my son Dylan just started high school today, and he said at junior high there were a lot of girls that had to wear their gym shirts. And I said, why? And he said, because they came to school and their shirts were too revealing. So
spaghetti straps.
Yeah, so they make them put their gym shirt on. And then it's like, I'm kind of thankful I don't have girls, because I don't know how you'd say, hey, if you want to wear that on your own private time, I don't love it, but you can. You just can't wear that to school. I don't know how
you
do
that. Well, isn't that, and schools tend to enforce that, and it's probably for the best, right?
Do you know what's happening at Evanston High School right now?
I don't.
Yoga pants?
Well, for the last couple of years, there have been debates over what is and is not allowed as part of their wardrobe. So this year, their new policy at Evanston High School is there is no clothing policy. You wear what you want.
Really?
They did away with it.
And how's that going?
It hasn't started yet.
Oh.
So nobody knows yet. But
that's really interesting. I bet you should have somebody in here to talk about that.
Yeah, because that might actually go better, because
I think the same.
When no one's telling you what to do, you tend to think for yourself.
Yeah.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I'm wondering, to the extent that maybe parents of our generation hang on too hard, because I don't know anybody whose parents gave them crap about their haircut when I was growing up. Parents were just like, I think they were better at letting go maybe than we are, and I realize that I haven't been that good about letting go, and I'm now going to be better about it.
I'm terrible at letting go. I really am, and Bill, you sometimes laugh at me, but I feel so much better knowing that you're still hanging on at 20. I only have 18 and 14 year olds.
Yeah,
but it is hard to let go. Is this your first one?
No. I've got a
27
year old, but he always seemed to keep his hair cut. Better, I guess. I'm trying to remember, but this.
You
is,
also have a son who's older than you, and I don't understand how
I am my own. I'm my own grandpa. I'll sing that song for you.
I have no idea how that's possible. So. Eric Zorn is here. Stick around if you want to jump in. We're 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN. Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune comes by every Monday, and we just talk about whatever's in the news, sometimes on the front page, sometimes on page 83. Let's talk a little bit about the monument situation, Eric. It's really escalated
into some trouble. Really heated up in the past week. Yeah, when just to refresh everybody's memory, the neo-Nazis, white supremacists protested in Charlottesville over the plans to remove a statue of Robert E. Lee, the Confederate general, from the Emancipation Park in that town. And this is really thrown into relief this question as to what these monuments stand for. And in doing a lot of the, you know, some research on this and looking into it, you know, the idea that these stands for some sort of, you know, this is the bravery of these generals and these wonderful people. A lot of these monuments were erected during Jim Crow. A lot more of them were erected after Brown versus Board of Education. Many of these Confederate monuments are basically a raised middle finger to African Americans and to people who feel like that it was wrong for the South to try to secede, essentially over the issue of slavery. And I've been inundated with mail from these dead enders who want to say that slavery wasn't really a big issue in secession. It was a big issue, and if you look at the Articles of Secession from the Confederate States that broke away from the U.S., It was about slavery. They mentioned it quite a bit. And essentially, Robert E. Lee led this rebellion in order to preserve the institution of chattel slavery, which is a horrible thing, you know, in retrospect. It was a horrible thing at the time. It's a horrible thing in retrospect. What do these statues stand for? And what does the Confederate battle flag stand for? And this is an issue that came up. Remember when Dylann Roof shot up that church in South Carolina? But in any case, South Carolina removed its Confederate flag because he was photographed, you know, embracing the Confederate flag. What does that flag stand for? And over the years, there's been this somewhat successful effort to transform the flag, the battle flag of the Confederacy and some of these statues into sort of, you know, memorials for sweet tea and Southern hospitality and grits and fiddle tunes and things like that. And in fact, you know, it still, for a lot of people, has always stood for this effort to preserve the institution of slavery. And to my mind, it's time for these statues on public land to be moved to museums or put into a museum context. And for us to take these highways that are named for Lee and for Jefferson Davis, to rename those highways, because they are painful reminders to people. And until we're really honest about what those statues and what those, you know, quote-unquote honors mean? We're not going to be able to begin to put this stain behind us. And I, you know, it seems like it's a many, many years too late, but it is time to do that. And when you press people about, you know, and there's a difference between like a book or a plaque or something that talks about what happened and a statue. A statue is an honor. There's a reason we don't have a statue of Osama bin Laden at the 9/11 memorial. There's a reason we don't have a statue. There's not a statue of Timothy McVeigh in Oklahoma City by the memorial to those victims there. We don't, you know, a statue, again, it's not history. It's an honor. And we have to realize, why are we honoring Robert E. Lee? Why are we honoring the people who, I mean, 600,000 people died in the Civil War over this issue. And again, we could have been covering it over, saying, oh, it's about, you know, stock car races and y'all and everything. And it really is not for a lot of people. And this has really thrown this into relief. I don't think you have to equate this. President Trump last week was saying, well, what next? We're going to get rid of statues to Washington and Jefferson because they own slaves. We remember Washington and Jefferson for building this country. We remember Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis for trying to tear this country apart. There's a big difference. Nobody out there is without sin, right? None of the presidents we've ever had have been fault-free. And the further back you go in history, the more people are of their time and have sins of their time. But we don't remember them primarily for that. That's not their major accomplishment. We honor them, you know, in spite of some of their flaws, not because of them. And I think when you look at a guy like Robert E. Lee, we are honoring him because of what he did, in, you know, like I said, in service of breaking apart the Union and preserving the institution of slavery. So that's why I've been arguing that it's time for these things to come down and to be, again, moved in and put into context. I don't think we have to erase any history. This isn't about history. It's about honor. And what do we honor? And what do we support? So,
well said, Eric.
Thank you.
The mayor of Baltimore, Maryland, had all these statues removed in the middle of the night, which was genius because there were no demonstrations. There was no violence. Could that have happened in Chicago? Could we have removed all those statues in the middle of the night?
We don't have that. We have, like, there's down at Oak, with the Oak Mound Cemetery. I'm trying to remember exactly where it was. But we don't have a lot of...
No, we don't.
There is, and of course, an issue that we're talking about right now in Chicago. There's a column that's dedicated to Balbo down on.
Yeah,
I think it's right by Balbo Drive. I'm not exactly sure where it is, but this question: should we put that statue, that honorary statue, and put that into, like I say, a museum context? Maybe return the column back to the Greeks or something.
Yeah,
and rename Balbo. I'm sorry. Yeah, Balbo.
Yeah.
For an Italian person who we have perhaps more honor for, Enrico Fermi. People have suggested Bernardine is another one. Cabrini.
Anthony Rizzo.
Cabrini. actually, when I did, I wrote about this a few years ago. People were saying, "Oh, this is all new," but no, it's not. It's this is an issue that's been alive for a long time. I did a reader poll on this. The Italian-American that people most wanted to honor was Ron Santo.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
That's a great idea.
Name a statue for Ron Santo. I love it. I was down with it. So anyway.
I love it.
Is that Elise Glink?
Yeah, she's going to do the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Wow.
Yeah.
You might probably want to talk to her more
Special
than me.
Special Eclipse
so.
Version.
I got my glasses.
Well, good to see you, and good to see Elise Glink, too.
Eric, thank you so much. We'll talk to you in a week.
Great.
It's Eric
get a
Zorin.
Haircut.
Yeah, get a haircut, for heaven's sakes. Kippy. All right. Elise Glink is here. You know what? She's hosting the Wintrust Business Lunch. We'll find out what she has next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.